I'm Kareem Ray, your host at the One Soccer Nation podcast. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Jose Tejas. Jose is the founder of Goals TV. Jose, thank you so much for taking the time today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Kareem. Thank you again for having me today. I appreciate it. Looking forward to the One Soccer Nation podcast. I think it's been an enlightening show just for me to tune into regularly. So yeah, man, excited for it.
Absolutely, me too. So for our listeners and viewers, what is Goals TV?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to quickly have anyone understand what Goals TV is, at a high level, we are a membership platform, a content-focused membership platform that's aiming to unite the soccer fan base, the growing soccer fan base here in North America. We're starting with content. We have a lot of exciting things planned that go well beyond that. But we are on a mission to make soccer cool in America. And in the age of the internet, I believe there's no better way to do that than by uniting content, creators, fans, as we believe they are the future of this game.
For sure. I mean, we're living in a very digital age. There's a lot of content. Before we even get into that, when did you start the company and why did you start it?
Man, it's a great question. You can kind of look back at this at when we started this venture, and you know, it really was in my personal opinion, out of necessity, based on a problem that I was looking to solve for myself, and it really scaled into, you know, a growing venture today. But we launched this probably right around the 2022 Men's World Cup. If I had to pick like an actual starting date, back then, no vision for what it's becoming today. But I launched it with the idea that it was somewhat difficult for me at the time. Keep in mind, right before the 2022 Men's World Cup, we were coming out of COVID, for those who don't remember, right? Coming out of COVID, things were starting to kind of come back to normal a little bit in terms of even seeing fans in the stadium across all leagues globally, especially here in the States. You know, excited for the next major tournament, right? That 2022 Men's World Cup. In those months leading up to it, what was really interesting from my perspective here in the States was during COVID, I found myself, like many other fans, without much to do. And I was looking for as many forms of content as I possibly could. I'm a massive fan of soccer stories. I believe stories tell, you know, again, a story beneath the game and around the game that so many fans don't realize how powerful they actually are, right? Stories that not just stem from, you know, games or matches or players that are based here in North America, but just globally. Stories about, you know, how the sport is impacting other parts of the world, specific countries. I love going down rabbit holes on the internet. And what was crazy about my time in searching for those stories was that it was somewhat difficult to find them, even on platforms as big as YouTube, right? For example, finding, you know, very solid and comprehensive Liga MX content in English, right? Most of the creators out there cover the league in Spanish because that's where it's played. It's played in Mexico, right? Or, you know, trying to find, you know, stories about African football and, you know, how it affects the geopolitics of that continent and the various countries involved. And, you know, soccer means more to so many people outside of North America and in this country as well. But it means so much more to those people than just the sport that we watch week in and week out. And it was crazy that I couldn't find so much of this content that I craved. And so I started really getting to a point in my mind where I thought, well, why can't I find this? Does this hub not exist here? If it's not on the biggest search engine on the internet visually, how can I make this available? Not just to myself, but maybe other fans who feel the way that I do, which was at the time, and I still feel very adamant about this today. I just feel as though legacy media, the traditional media outlets, really only publish and push news and content that serves their agenda, right? That allows them to spin, you know, any sort of positive or negative sentiment around stories they want to push out. And it's not necessarily always what the fans crave. And so I thought to myself and a couple buddies of mine at the time, you know, we're trying to watch certain games. I was thinking, I don't know, could we find a way to work with certain creators? And I'm happy to touch on some of my background, but at the time I was also in the gaming space, gaming and entertainment, and I was working with independent content creators, and I thought, well, how cool would it be, right? If there was like a Twitch TV like platform or another platform that was built specifically for football fans or soccer fans. And could we even go further and tailor it to fans here in the States where the sport isn't as big and really create something that I think will serve many fans like myself. And that was the problem we were looking to solve. And when we launched it, I'll be honest, it was such a rough version of what we have today. It was five or six different creators. They each kind of represented their own content category, so to speak. We launched it right before the World Cup just to see, right? And back then we didn't own any of the tech. We literally slapped our branding over a white labeled platform and just tried to see if there was any interest in this. And back then we saw enough small traction that we thought, okay, could we scale this up if we added more to it, more selection, more content, more creators? And that's how, at a very high level, we've scaled to where we are today.
Amazing. I mean, it's saying that you really focus on the fan. And I remember listening to a SoccerX podcast this week, and I don't remember his name. I think it's Robbie. He's a content creator, and he really focuses on the Arsenal fan base. Big black guy. Do you know him, Robbie?
Robbie from AFTV. Yeah, I think he's I'm correct on who you're talking about. Yeah, he's at this point, the guy's got to be pretty famous.
That's the guy. So I actually met him at SoccerX back in Miami in November, and I was listening to a podcast that he did at SoccerX too. And he really mentions how important fans are to the game. And if we take a look back in 2020, 4 years ago when COVID happened, there was no fans in the stadium, and how did that affect the players and the game? Right? It wasn't the same. He really emphasizes that, and I think what you're doing in creating that hub for soccer content creators, there's definitely a need in the market for that. So with saying that, I just really want to highlight how important fans are. With saying that, where does your connection with the game really start?
Oh man, I'm a player first and foremost. Well, now today I will say I'm a fan first and foremost. I think back then, my journey is I grew up, unlike other fans in this part of the world, I grew up almost like acclimated to the game immediately. My family, they're diehard soccer fans. I grew up loving, just full disclosure, European soccer before I ever got accustomed to the growing game here in the States. And so my family are all diehard FC Barcelona fans. Didn't really have a choice in that matter, to be honest. Like I that's just the team that I supported because my family supported them. And hearing all the stories, I grew a massive passion for the club. And when I was younger, my dad, him being the adamant fan that he is, when Major League Soccer started to pick back up again, because keep in mind, back in the late 90s, right? The professional leagues that we had here in the States had failed. MLS popped up right around, I think it was 96 or 98. And I remember going to, the Dallas Burn games. I live here in Dallas, Texas, and going to the Dallas Burn games at the Cotton Bowl well before they ever rebranded to FC Dallas and moved out to Frisco. They were here in the heart of Dallas, Texas. And man, I mean, you can imagine back then, the stadium wasn't filling up by any means. We were kind of watching this game adamantly because we didn't know how long it was going to last, right? I think for, especially my parents, my dad specifically, he knew that this league, was an iteration of a previous league that had failed. And so he took us to as many games as we possibly could so that we could see on the field, some kind of representation of what we were watching on TV. And even back then, right, on TV, it's not like we had a ton of access to Barcelona games. There were a lot of bootleg streaming involved, and my parents, were kind of pirates back then. But it's we consumed the game any way we possibly could. And fast forward to when I was playing soccer at this time, but fast forward to when FC Dallas became a club. They rebranded. They opened up a youth system, right? An opportunity for players to come in and kind of fly under the umbrella of the brand and represent the club at a younger level. So the minute that happened, right, my dad saw it as a massive opportunity. Like, hey, I mean, if you can play, and we didn't have a lot of money back then, if you can earn your way onto a roster, and really, you know, almost prove that we can earn our spot and have it paid for to an extent, because for those who aren't aware, U.S. soccer is a pay-to-play system. That's what I did. I made it my mission as a child. And thankfully, I made it onto a team as a young teenager, you know, 12, 13 years old, scaled that into playing for the first iteration of some kind of a competitive team, youth team for FC Dallas. Went to go compete, and that's my foundation, man. It's truly as a player, but I always say that I was a fan first, and I still say that to this day.
Absolutely. But, you know, Barcelona back in the day was really, really fun to watch. You know, when they had the Messi, the Xavi, the Iniesta, Jordi Alba, Piqué, Puyol, Dani Alves, Neymar, Messi, like Suarez. Those were the times to really watch Barcelona. What are your thoughts on Barca now?
Oh man, you're getting me teary-eyed, man. Yeah, I mean, like honestly, we witnessed the greatest generation of soccer, in my opinion, in the 2000s, mainly the 2010s, right? When Barca kind of reclaimed the Champions League in 05, 06. That started probably the greatest era in club history. Barcelona today is on its way back, I think, in my opinion. I think they're getting back to their roots. I think we lost our way, not just financially over the last 4 or 5 years, but we lost almost our philosophy at the same time, right? The La Masia, the reliance on our youth academy and letting that lead and guide us into some of these historic competitions, not just La Liga, but Champions League as well. And we're seeing that now finally again, right? I mean, Barcelona is one of the, in my opinion, the three biggest clubs on the planet, which means that they usually have more resources, more funds. And I kind of felt like we lost our way. We started trying to spend ridiculous money to bring in big name talents. And that's never how we've really done things. And so now being able to, you know, see that, you know, we're relying on youngsters like Lamine Yamal, like Pau Cubarsí, like those 16, 17 year olds running the show in Champions League matches. It makes my heart warm, man. It really does. And so we're not back to where we were just yet, but I think we're on our way.
Sure. How does Goals TV, what's your competitive advantage over your competitors?
Man, that's a great question. I think, you know, I think about competition all day, every day, almost 24/7, right? And when we think about competition, I feel like sometimes we're in a boat by ourselves. I feel like we, you know, when I look at a lot of platforms out there in the market that we operate in, streaming platforms, right? Look at the Hulus of the world, the Netflixes of the world, the YouTubes of the world, Twitch TV, whatever it may be. I don't believe they're aiming for the unique selling point that we're aiming. And I don't believe they ever will. They have scaled too far up, right? And so when you think about how we're going about it, tackling specifically the North American base, I look at more, you know, traditional soccer media outlets who are investing in video content and looking to compete with them by focusing on fans, making our platform fan-centric more than anything else. It is my opinion that fans are potentially even more knowledgeable than some of the pundits that we've grown really accustomed to over the last 10, 15, 20 years, right? When I watch ESPN FC today, for example, watching Craig Berley, Stevie Nichol, you know, offer certain takes that, in my opinion, maybe are not as well researched or as knowledgeable, just simply because they're not fans, right? They're not fans that represent specific clubs. You know, giving an Arsenal, for example, the example I always use is I remember Stevie Nichol talking about Bukayo Saka of Arsenal and talking about how I think he picked up a knock in one of these games, and he mentioned that was kind of a risk because Saka tends to be a player that will, you know, sit out for when he picks up knocks like these, right? He may miss a match or two or three in a row. When in reality, most Arsenal fans will know that Bukayo actually has like a streak, right, of 80, almost 90 plus matches in a row of not missing a game. And that's something that I feel like only true fans of that club are going to be knowledgeable about, right? In my opinion, and it may be a controversial one, in my opinion, what makes Goals TV stand out amongst our competition is the fact that we believe independent content creators are the future of this game. Legacy media and traditional media outlets will always have their place. However, I believe the future fans will look to other fans who have invested just as much, if not more so than they have, into understanding their clubs, their players, and bringing content to life that truly captures not just our current generation of fans, but the next generation as well.
Absolutely. The game wouldn't be the game without fans. And yeah, they're definitely the heartbeat of the game. So part of it. So very important. With saying that, really focusing on the platform. So you guys have content creators that create soccer content only in North America. Is that correct?
For the most part, I would say 90%+ of the creators on a platform North American. The great part about the internet, right, is that we've captured some attention overseas as well. And so we do have, I would say, roughly 10% of the creators who are based overseas in Europe or elsewhere that create content for some of the clubs globally.
So you have the content creators, and then in regards to content, is it, obviously it's all soccer or football, football as European football. Is it just storytelling on the platform, or is there guys doing training videos and all different type of soccer content, funny videos, or is it just specifically storytelling?
I think it almost depends on what season of Goals TV we're really talking about, right? In terms of the creators that we have just, I would say, somewhere between 70 to 80 different content creators at this moment in time. So we still have a long ways to go in terms of building up our selection. But at any one point in time in our history, yes, we've seen everything from, storytelling, and that storytelling encompasses everything from reactions to certain matches or leagues, clubs, whatever it may be, major breaking news. That's been a very popular topic on the platform. Coaching, educational content on that front, right? How to juggle, how to think about tactics on the pitch, things like that. The spectrum of soccer content that's available to the fan in the age of the internet is massive, right? And I think that's why when I say, and I say this to creators that I meet with, every day, every week, that when they express how great of a job we're doing and how big our platform really is, I always feel like we're actually on the small end, when you think about the ceiling, right? And how much of this creator market we could potentially capture and how much selection we're still missing on the platform. I think soccer content's going to evolve tremendously over time, over the next, let's even say 3 to 5 years. And we want to be able to capture as much of it as we possibly can.
Understood. So you guys got content creators, fans, and then who else could use the platform?
When I say content creators as well, I think that itself is somewhat broad, right? We have video content creators, right? Those who focus on podcasts, whether they're audio or video. And then and of course, just other educational content, but then you even look at articles that are now populating on the site, right? So if you're a writer, maybe you don't, your medium isn't, your preferred medium isn't video. Maybe you want to write content, and the written word is not dead by any means, right? It's at times even more captivating than video, just depending on who you are as a fan and how you like to consume your content. So we're hoping to obviously scale as much of this up over time. And we believe that it won't stop with just written and video content. Over time, we'd like to be able to translate much of what we're doing into IRL experiences, right? Take the online experience of being a fan into an offline one where I believe the fandom will be cemented. But that's a scaling opportunity for us that we'll hopefully be able to tackle as the years go on.
Understood. So what about, people that come across, our podcast that are listening in or watching it, how, and they're content creators, whether that's, in written form, articles or podcasters or YouTubers, how can that specifically create soccer content? How can they get onto your platform?
I think the easiest way today is to first just check it out for themselves. So, you know, again, the spelling of our platform, goals.tv, it is GOLZ.tv. There was once upon a time on this platform where the only way you could be a part of it was by invitation, right? I was reaching out to every individual content creator myself and initiating conversations to bring them onto the platform, because at that time, our platform was very rough, and I wanted them to have a vision for what we could be, not what we were back then. But now we've scaled up our platform to a point where it's somewhat self-service to an extent, for certain creators who want to be able to have their content distributed to a soccer-specific audience. They can head to goals.tv today. They could register an account. And once we've verified their account, they're able to start, you know, uploading content as they would like, right? And I think the beauty of our platform is right now, while we're not yet monetizing, because we're more focused on getting to critical mass, you know, this is an extra outlet in their broader distribution that has that unique selling point, right? That is hopefully getting in front of football or soccer fans that maybe aren't discovering their content on some of these very large platforms that exist out there today. So there's a number of ways to do it, but I think we've even had some creators just simply reach out to me on Twitter or any other social platform, right? Reach out to me in a DM, want to have a conversation about it before they join. That's totally okay too. I still have those conversations today and I love them, honestly.
For sure. So obviously, you know, when you have to kind of sell the business to creators, what was your pitch to them to say, hey, you know, come join us, you know, be a part of this building process with us, or just, you know, post and give us feedback? What was your pitch to them?
Man, it was very, very strong storytelling based. And the reason I say that is simply because we didn't have a platform when I pitched probably the first 20 to 30 creators that we signed. We had no platform. So there was nothing for them to see visually. They really had to listen to what I was saying. And as we had this conversation about the platform, and keep in mind, right, for those who are curious about how I even started this, it was, I had the idea, I drafted everything into a doc. I had it ready, kind of all prepared, almost as if I was pitching to an investor maybe. And I had my points that I thought would be valuable to independent content creators. And I would reach out to them in cold DMs. That's all it was. You know, my background is I'm a biz dev. I'm a sales guy. I spent quite some time at Amazon corporate before going into gaming and entertainment. So that's all that I did was just a ton of cold outreach. And when I got somebody into a meeting, the pitch was, this is potentially a risk-free opportunity for you to get in early with a platform that is honing in on the audience that you're most likely targeting because of the fact that you cover soccer or football and really nothing else, right? So when I say risk-free, meaning even to this day, we're not yet monetizing. We're scaling up traffic month over month at a decent rate, which is great. But the value that we can offer as a platform in the age of the internet, right, in 2024, it sort of pales in comparison to what other platforms can offer, just realistically speaking, right? YouTube, TikTok, if it doesn't get banned, other platforms, they're able to help you monetize today if you can kind of prove certain requirements. Goals TV is not yet able to offer that. So the pitch has always been, look, we don't want to change anything about what you're doing today. We think your content is fantastic. That's why we reached out in the first place. And we simply want, again, to give you a chance to come in early, start building an audience on a platform in the earliest days of it, on a football fan-centric platform. And when we do get to monetization, you'll already be there, right? You'll already be at a point where you've built up an audience. You don't have to start from scratch to meet some certain requirement. You'll be able to hit the ground running. And that's always been my mantra, right? When we're talking to creators, is that if this feels like work being on this platform, and if it's not an absolute no-brainer for them to be here, they won't be here, right? So we had to find a way to make their experience as seamless as it possibly could be. And I'll say, Kareem, we did not start that way. There was a time where it was very difficult for creators to be here because, you know, they couldn't even log into a portal and upload the content themselves. Like, they had to send us the content and we had to upload it for them. And there were no analytics to see how the content was performing. And there just wasn't a ton of incentive to be here. Those things have now changed as we've scaled up, which has been fantastic. Kudos to our CTO and our dev team. They've done a lot of great work in the last 9 to 12 months. But it's been a long road to getting here now, where they're able to have somewhat of a similarly positive experience on our platform as they do on those more established platforms they're bringing their content to.
For sure. You mentioned your team. How many people do you have on your team?
It's a small team. We're lean and mean. I have a couple folks around me doing things more community and creator focused. So I do have a co-founder, Zeke Carcella. Guy's awesome. He's been with me kind of since the earliest days of this all. He's another gaming centric person, fan, just like I am, right? That's kind of how we met. We were in the gaming and esports space, working on different things, different companies. He's someone that I just happily met through the internet, through Twitter, and got to talking about this thing. And he really loved the idea of it. And keep in mind, this is someone who's mid-20s, been involved with startups for the majority of his young professional career. That's kind of what he knows. And so there wasn't so much of a risk from his perspective. Whereas I feel if I went and found another co-founder who maybe was a little bit older, much of his professional experience was with established companies, it might've seemed like a riskier move, right? That person, whoever that may have been, might've demanded more in order to be involved. Zeke took a real shot on us and on me, and I'm grateful for that. We've added a couple other, smaller role people to kind of help us out with various stuff on socials or content. And then on the other side of the product, we have my CTO, Ryan Miller, who's an entrepreneur himself, and the guy's absolutely crushing it with the product, and an outsourced dev team. We're a startup through and through, finding ways of building something that fans want to really consume and be a part of, while keeping costs down is the trick here with Goals TV, and not just us, but I think startups in general. But I think that we, for the time being, I know we'll have to scale up in certain areas, add more key pieces to our growing team. But I think we've done a pretty bang up job so far, considering how small we are.
Nice. In regards to your dev team, how many people do you have on your dev team?
Not that many. I think it's maybe like four or five tops. We have a CTO who does a lot of the grunt work himself, I'll be honest. And then outside of that, a few people based overseas that he regularly connects with. I don't even connect with them that often, to be honest. It's really him. And I work through him for all of the updates that we're doing, or the debugging we're doing on the site. So the dev team is not very big. I think they're just skilled, right? They're able to bring our vision to life on a technical level without it being this massive technical team.
Got it. And what country, are they all from the same country, the dev team?
Eastern Europe, mostly, I believe. I think there's maybe one guy out in the Middle East who kind of helps with some of the more nuanced configurations that we have on the back end, right? Building out a new feature, styling issues that we may have to debug, just some of the heavier lift stuff, because again, we don't want to, that's the one part about, I think, working with outsourced talent in general, right? Is you want to make sure that you don't go too cost effective on that path, right? Because you want a certain level of quality to be brought into the product itself. And so we make sure that we have our best guys working on our biggest problems. And we have the rest of our dev team working on things that we know there's a very strong process already built out for. And they just really kind of have to follow that model. So it's again, small dev team, but I feel like we have folks in the right place.
All right. So you got to show me some behind the scenes in regards to workflows and what does the behind the scenes look like? It'd be pretty interesting to see.
It's cool, man. I think I'll be honest, I'm on a lot of calls always, and as a little bit of a teaser for those who may be following Goals TV, we're getting ready to launch a V3 of the platform in the next, let's say, 3 to 6 months. That V3 will allow us to roll out our mobile app for the first time as well, so that's going to be great. And improving accessibility is always great. But in order to do that, right, we're basically rebuilding our platform from scratch with a completely new coding language, which means that I'm spending a lot of my days currently sifting Goals TV page by page, trying to determine which features need to be kept, removed, buffed up, nerfed down, right? I mean, there's a lot of back and forth there, and it's almost like the comparison I always make is, you know, for those who want a realization of what this is like, I mean, it's like, imagine you're an architect of a massive corporate building and you're picking every little detail, right? What the light bulbs are going to be, the light switches, you know, things that most people just don't think about. That's kind of the process that we're going through today. So the workflows right now, Kareem, are pretty insane.
Got it. There was something I was going to ask you. Shoot, it just left. before I go to this next question, I want to ask you, you mentioned gaming. You're into esports and gaming.
Yeah.
You know, it's something I really want to get back into, but I've been just stuck on this grind work mode, man. Just work, work, work. I actually have a VR headset, the MetaMask or whatever, Facebook. The Oculus Quest is called.
I love that.
So I play Saber Beats on it. It's pretty fun. So in regards to how are you involved in the esports space and gaming?
Yeah, man, it's and I'm still involved, actually, believe it or not. So for those who are thinking, hey, you know, this guy is doing Goals TV full time, how is he funding it? I don't have investors, right? I think that's something that I originally wanted to do with Goals TV. I really wanted to go out and raise capital and you know, have this, you know, be my full-time baby. In a lot of ways, it still very much is. However, I think after having some initial preliminary conversations with certain investors, I kind of realized that until we get more traction for Goals TV, I won't have the leverage in those rooms and those conversations that I'd like to have, right? That I'd like to make sure that my people, my team, myself, for all the blood, sweat, and tears that we're pouring into this project, that we're protected, right? And that we have a strong stake in this game long term. So as opposed to going the investment route, we're bootstrapping, which means that I'm personally funding the entire operation myself. And the operation is funded by, you know, really project-based work that I do still in the gaming and esports space, whether that's consulting on a certain aspect of a new game that's popping up, or I'm doing digital media sales on behalf of an esports and gaming media outlet that's out there. You know, at this very moment, you know, I have a couple different contracts that I'm currently working on that, are all tentatively temporary, right? They will end at some point, either this year or next year, whenever the case may be. But those are what's funding my venture. But in terms of my work in esports and gaming, I mean, I first got into it through sales, biz dev, kind of marketing front. I took a massive, massive risk. So again, kind of alluding to my background a little bit, I left Amazon after 6 or 7 years learning how to build products, services, businesses, launching certain markets on behalf of certain divisions retail-wise for Amazon. Kind of burnt out of it, to be honest, a little bit back in 2018 or whenever it was that I moved. And when I left for an opportunity in esports and gaming that was maybe half of the compensation I was getting at Amazon. So talking my wife into that was interesting, but, you know, cutting my, she's very, very supportive. I always make jokes, right? But she's so supportive. She wants me to follow my dreams through and through. And, we had to figure out kind of how the budget would work, right? Month over month. But, you know, she does really well in her career as well. She's an accountant. And so, you know, we found a way to make it work, but trust me, man, it was something that I was not loathing, but I was almost like fearful of, like, how do I explain to my partner that, you know, I'm going to kind of put us at risk a little bit and follow a passion of mine. So I moved into esports and gaming. I worked for a very, very young, traditional media outlet, that was covering the scene a number of different ways, working with influencers along the way. But I was jumping into a space that I knew a good amount about because I'm a gamer myself. You know, I grew up playing FIFA. I grew up playing first person shooter games, big Call of Duty fans. Even to this day, I'm probably going to watch some professional Call of Duty played later on today. And I play Apex Legends still today whenever I get a chance, like once every few weeks or something. But you know, when I moved into that space, all I knew were sales and biz dev, and a little bit of marketing. I didn't know about paid ads. I didn't know about content building and aggregating an audience at scale. I didn't really know that. But I jumped in, learned as quickly as I could, and helped scale a very young startup into some meaningful revenue month over month. And that led to more gaming and media opportunities just because of how young that space really is, right? When companies and projects see talent, they want to try and bring it in, even if it's on a part-time basis, just to move the needle with their respective projects. So that scaled up over time, and I'm still doing some of that work today.
That's pretty cool. Esports, that's what's up.
Thanks, man.
And who would have knew, you know, there'd be professional gamers, you know, parents definitely back in the day always wanted kids to come off the games, and now it's a career. So you know, you got the reverse happening now, you know, parents pushing kids, hey, if you really want to do this, then go for it. You know, we'll support, we'll get you the computer, the systems, and you know, the monitors, so on and so forth. So it's really cool to see that transition. And we're living in such a new era and different times with, you know, technology, AI, blockchain, crypto, all this digital media. You know, I think I remember hearing, I think it was Ty Lopez mentioning 60 billion. I don't know if it was him or someone else, but just mentioning that 60 billion pieces of content go out a day.
I believe it.
Something along those lines. I'm not too sure if that consists of like taxes and calls and stuff like that, but we're living in big numbers times, right? In abundance.
It's crazy. And I think that, you know, with games specifically, like it's a scene that has scaled up very quickly. And you can argue it's one of the core pillars of entertainment today in a massive way. You mentioned crypto, Web3, blockchain, AI. There are some projects that I'm working on that are diving head first into those spaces, right? Web3 gaming being going through somewhat of a bear market, but on the up and up towards a bull market again. There's so much opportunity in this very technological world that we live in is going to change massively. But one thing I know from my perspective is that regardless of where it goes and what I'll have to learn along the way, I'm a massive gamer at heart. I don't think that'll ever change. I think there was a time where my wife would game with me, believe it or not. You know, she at one point would play Call of Duty with me competitively if needed. And it was fun, man. Like, we would bond over that. And as you know, we've gotten older, I still have the bug. She's kind of moved on from it. But yeah, man, I mean, people talk about Project Mbappe now on the soccer front, right? Raising your kids to be the next global superstar, trying to start them as early as possible. I see the same things. I remember when Buga won the Fortnite World Cup and there being like a Project Buga type of you know, sentiment across social media and then the internet in general, because yeah, I mean, these weren't opportunities that existed for us back in the day. I always say that me at 33 years old today, I feel like I was born 10 years too early, you know, that we used to compete for really just pride when it came to FIFA or anything else, you know. There were online forums that you could go play against, you know, game battles, major league gaming, you know, all of those things were at play, but you were doing it for very, very small sums of cash or just pride at the end of the day. And now it's scaled up into, you know, massive monetization opportunities.
Absolutely. I'm interested to ask you this, and we can tie back to Goals TV in regards to content. So what is it that makes viewers so interested? Because I used to do it myself, right? I'm a gamer too, and you know, I played a lot of FIFA and Call of Duty too, but I also used to watch gamers on YouTube, Chris Smooth, KSI, you know, entertainers play the game and talk about it and so on and so forth. So what is it about viewers watching other people play the game that is so captivating? And we could tie it back to Ghost TV in regards to storytelling and so on and so forth.
I think what it is at its heart is, you think about when Twitch TV started, right? I always go back to this story, you know, Justin Kahn and the platform that he launched. I don't even think he thought back then that it was going to be what it is today. You know, I think he just decided that I'm going to start recording myself, because it was Justin TV before it was ever Twitch TV. It was just him. Like, you were you were tuning into a random website on the internet where you'd watch this guy on his camera, right? And, you know, kind of live his life. And we're seeing even a lot of that value translate to the internet today, where I believe creators are being asked of their audience to be more authentic, to show more of their true selves. They want less of that polished content, so to speak. And, you know, this stems all the way back then to when Justin Kahn started Twitch TV. And, you know, I think the story goes that, you know, they started with just him. He was offering a lens to his life that other corners of the internet really weren't offering. Other folks would notice it on the internet and want to kind of jump in and do the same thing. So they scaled the platform up a little bit. Others are kind of, you know, live streaming what they're doing, whatever it may be. And then eventually you start to see across everybody on Justin TV who's, you know, live streaming to some kind of an audience, one of the most popular categories was gaming. You know, people watching other people play video games. And I think, you know, the use case for a lot of us back then was, if there's someone on the internet who's better at this than, you know, what I am, I want to go learn from that person on the internet. If I could do it for free, right? Watching it on Twitch or anywhere else, I'll do it for free. And you would watch someone play a game in a way that at the time you just weren't able to do it. And, you know, what's really cool about this story is that I compare it in a lot of ways, because I get this question, you know, when I work in gaming and I'm talking to families or parents or anybody else who's non-endemic to the space and just doesn't really understand. I always make this analogy because I think it makes it click for them. To me, it's no different than NFL fans who tune in, or sports fans in general, who tune into professionals playing, right? It's the same thing. You're watching someone who's exponentially better at that sport or at that activity than you are play the game in a way that you could never do it. And I don't see much difference. So when I saw, you know, Justin TV scale up into Twitch TV and they got acquired by Amazon and it all clicked, it all kind of made sense. Gaming has a massive opportunity to not just showcase the skills of players who have excelled, but I think it then scaled into more lifestyle content, more watch along content. And now the use cases are endless at this point.
Sure. In what ways do you leverage data and analytics to enhance Goals TV's prospecting and client monitoring processes?
That's a great question. I think data is very much a push and pull for us, right? I mean, of course, we're using data every day, whether it's to analyze what components or parts of Goals TV fans are most receptive to, right? What are they clicking on? What types of content are they watching? But then we also look at, you know, how fans are engaging with some of these creators, even on other platforms, right? What's the variance there? How are they engaging with those same creators on our platform versus others? And how do we use this data to identify other hidden gems in the creator space that we could bring onto this platform and offer more value to the growing audience that we have here at Goals TV? It's constantly changing, constantly iterating. I will say, though, the one aspect of data that I feel remains constant is that the one metric that I don't care much about in this day and age is following or a subscriber-based number. And the reason being is because, to me, it's a bigger indicator of how long a creator has been doing something. More often than not, there are definitely flashes in the pan and those cases, right, where someone can go viral very quickly and build an audience very quickly. But more often than not, someone who has a very large following or a very large subscriber base has been doing this for quite some time, and they've just stuck it out. They have found a way to continuously over time just be consistent with this and build that audience more and more year over year. That to me is like what I call a vanity metric, right? Is, you know, for those creators or, you know, quote unquote influencers who want to lean on those numbers, we don't utilize that data a ton. I care more about how their content is currently being engaged with and what fans and audience members are saying anecdotally about that content. That also factors in to our decision-making processes here at Goals TV. Anecdotal data is significantly more difficult to track. It's not scalable. It really is a manual process. But I would say it's just as important, if not more so, than many of the tangible KPIs and metrics that we are invested in here at Goals TV today.
What would you say is like the biggest challenge that you've faced with Goals TV so far to date?
A great question. I'll be honest, and something I feel like it's been somewhat neglected in recent months because of me as a founder wearing so many hats that it's sometimes easy to go off the path a little bit. But I truly feel marketing and distribution is by far the biggest challenge, because of the fact that we're a brand new platform. We don't have the trust with the fans, with the audience members. YouTube's been around for decades, right? TikTok has proven its trust level and its opportunity level with how quickly certain creators have gone viral on that platform. It's the same case for how quickly Facebook boomed, how quickly Instagram boomed. There are a lot of players in this market, content-wise, who have built a pretty strong trust with creators. And not just, again, with some of that performance stuff, but again, just with being able to successfully distribute content. And so for us, that is a massive challenge. We don't have the trust yet. We have to continue to build that up. Much of that is continuing to, display our mission, put it on full display, echo it as much as we possibly can. Let that mission, right, make soccer cool in America, let that be our North Star metric for every decision that we make here. But I think at the same time, focusing on parts of the soccer pyramid creator-wise that we haven't tapped into yet are going to be massive for us, right? MLS is great, and there's nothing wrong with Major League Soccer. I'm a massive fan, being an FC Dallas fan myself. But I know that they're at such a high level that they may not see as much value in Goals TV at this point in time. So we're aiming for partnerships with, some of the, let's call it the lower level of the pyramid, right? USL Championship, which we currently have a partnership with today. Clubs in the USL Championship, USL 1, USL 2, the Women's Super League for USL. There's a lot of opportunity. NISA, right? Whatever it may be, there's a lot of opportunity for us to grow the selection, which impacts marketing and distribution. It impacts our ability to form trust with the audience that will consume this content, because they feel their favorite creators are already on this platform. And if we're representing a significant amount of the pyramid soccer wise, we can maybe build up more of that trust quicker than we are at this current moment. But outside of that, distribution wise, it also means that, I've been so heads down with the product lately. I mentioned before building out a V3 of Goals TV and a mobile app. It's easy to get lost in the sauce, so to speak, right? To be so focused on having a product that looks and feels fantastic that you sometimes get away from, hey, our creators who are on this platform, we also have to serve them, right? We can't just, build something cool for the audience. We need to make sure that these creators feel like it's worthwhile for them to be here. So forming distribution partnerships and marketing partnerships that will allow their content to be consumed at scale on Goals TV is a massive initiative for 2024 and beyond.
Yeah. I gotta sign one Soccer Nation up on Goals TV. I haven't done that yet. We gotta do that. Make sure we get our content out on there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What would you say is like one thing, what's like one thing that you could do today that would really help the company move forward, take a big leap?
I think the one thing I could do today, I could do more of today, is what I'm doing, I think, today, right now, as we sit here on this show, is be more public facing. I think at times it's really easy for certain founders. I think Kareem, first off, you do a fantastic job of this. I feel like I aspire to, making myself as visible as you've made yourself on your mission for One Soccer Nation. I think I need to do more of this, right? Where I'm kind of going out, making connections, finding a way to be more public facing on shows that are tapping into an audience that hasn't heard about us just yet. This message somewhat plays into what we just talked about with marketing and distribution. Just as I need to build trust with fans for our platform, I need to build more trust with the fans myself, right? And echo the message that we're getting out there. I think I'm doing more of that this year in 2024 than I really ever have. And it's kind of uncharted territory for me. When I started Goals TV, I wasn't in any way, shape, or form a content creator. I didn't consider myself that. Even working in the gaming space, I was more on the biz dev side of things and consulting. I never like really turned on the camera and tried to live stream or tried to record to put myself out there. I just thought I should be doing all of this through Goals TV. But I think if I can be a public-facing founder on this mission of making soccer cool in America and just showing this audience who's building trust with me that there's a platform that's embracing those values, I believe that it will move the needle for us long-term. I may not reap the benefits in the short term, but I think content has this unique ability to compound over time in a way that I would never be able to if I just solely focused on Goals TV being the public-facing outlet. So yeah, man, like I said, you're kind of showing me the way here. And I think that I'm going to continue to, utilize this, these types of mediums, these types of content opportunities moving forward.
Absolutely. Well, I really appreciate that. Is this your first podcast on Goals TV?
In terms of like covering Goals TV, like on another podcast?
Yeah.
No, I've done it a couple other times, but it's very seldomly. And I will say this, Kareem, this is the first show where I think we've dug into the nitty gritty of the business side of it, right? And why we're doing what we're doing and the execution, the tactics that we're using and what's important to us, right? A lot of, pods that we've done in the past have been solely centered around the mission and, why we think that this platform needs to exist versus how we're going about executing upon it. So this has been honestly a breath of fresh air. I really haven't had many of these conversations outside of the enclosed circle of our team.
Well, that's exciting. I'm appreciative that I can share a different perspective about yourself and Goals TV. It's always nice to give people a breath of fresh air. With saying that, you already have those content creators on your platform that you could just tap into to spread the message. And it's definitely really good to share more about yourself and about the company, and it gives people more of an insight, and again that trust factor, the transparency, the story. It's a win-win overall.
I agree. Yeah,
I mean, if you can help us tap into more too, that'd be amazing. With saying that, can you discuss any successful strategies or initiatives Goals TV has implemented to expand its client base or improve customer retention?
Yeah, no, I think the biggest strategy that we implement today and that we will always implement moving forward is being somewhat selective about the creators that we bring to this platform. Don't get me wrong, I just kind of referred to how creators can just join the platform and sign up today, and we definitely want that. It will boost selection no matter what. But I think that we also have to layer on in a very intentional way, content creators that we believe fill real gaps in our content selection on our platform, right? So, for an example, going after not just podcasts, but can we also offer vlogs on the platform, right? Give people a more in-depth behind the scenes look. And I think, being really, really vocally self-critical about where our gaps really are and not just sliding them under the rug and saying, well, fans will be okay with this, or they should be okay with this amount of selection. I think always striving for a better, spectrum of content that fans can tune into, right? Imagine turning on Goals TV and there's always something new, always a new creator, a new piece of content available is always going to be our intention moving forward. So I think that's one strategy that will always remain the same, is being truly selective there. The other is, and I can't echo this enough, is bringing creators under the hood, so to speak, giving them a chance to test features before they ever go live, giving them a chance to work through our platform and give us feedback that we feel is going to be crucial in building a platform that fans truly want, right? In the startup world, I'm sure you've seen this on your end. Too often, I believe founders operate off of assumption, right? They themselves are a fan in that space. And so they tend to lean on everything they know without talking to their core customers or their core partners or whatever it may be, and bringing them deep into the process out of fear of I don't know, maybe back, not necessarily backlash, right? But out of fear of maybe some negative sentiment being exchanged, or maybe just sometimes just feeling embarrassed, right? Because they feel like, oh, this product should be better. This creator is not going to, you know, like what we're building so far. I think what I've learned over time is that creators appreciate it. You know, they appreciate that a company is willing to go as far as like bringing them in, and giving them a chance to have a real stamp on how something like this is really built before it's ever released to the masses. And they can say that they had that impact on the company. And there's more than a few creators who have had a very, very significant impact on how we've gone about building this platform in a way that soccer fans, not just here in North America, but if we think about long-term scale, potentially globally, will be receptive to Goals TV. So I'm grateful for all of that, but it did take some inner monologue, I'll say, to really be brave enough to lean on some of our earliest adopters in terms of creators and, you know, leaning on them for that feedback.
Absolutely. Coming towards the end here, the last question that I have, just, you know, to be respectful of your time. How do you see Goals TV evolving in the next 5 years, particularly in terms of business growth and market presence?
Man, that's a great question. I think without, you know, giving away too much, the vision that I see for Goals TV, and this is something that I think anyone can potentially get excited about, is while we're starting with content, right? Video content and an article and written content at scale. I mentioned at the top of this pod that I want this to be a membership, and I really want it to feel that way. When you think about any membership, a gym membership, a country club, a content-focused membership, whatever it may be, that unites content, fans, community, I want to go deep into those waters with Goals TV, right? So if I would consider Goals TV to be a success, if we were able to successfully translate a fan's online experience into an offline one. And the offline part of it is so crucial to me because that's where I believe true fandom is cemented. For fans who are just now discovering, let's say, Major League Soccer because of the Messi effect, right? Because he is the world's biggest star. And they're trying to understand how this game works and where to find some of the best content regarding some of these teams that they're discovering. We want to be able to show them that, hey, there's some great stories being told through the lens of content on this platform. That's the hook, maybe, to get them in. But we believe their fandom won't be truly cemented until they can meet the creators that they're engaging with on this platform, the fans who are, you know, going back and forth with them in the comments section, right? Can we find a way to take this experience that's mostly happening online and move it into an offline experience, whether that means we're doing an annual event through Goals TV, whether that means we're partnering with our pro club partners and doing little events here and there to unite some of these online communities, whatever it may be, right? We want a membership to have truly tangible benefits that run very, very deep and create a level of fandom that maybe North American soccer just hasn't seen yet. And that's how I believe we will be successful long-term. And that's equally how I believe we'll be able to compete with others in the market. I believe other platforms out there they've scaled up so far that I don't know if they're nimble enough and flexible enough to pivot in a direction that would allow them to truly compete with the vision that we have for soccer fans here in North America.
Amazing. Just to close off here, where can investors or fans connect with you?
Yeah, I think for fans, in all honesty, on all socials, you know, I think outside of LinkedIn, my handle has been the same across all platforms, and it's tied to my gamer tag. So I'm, like I said, still a gamer at heart. It's literally at It's Bromigo. So ITSBROMIGO. That has been my gamer tag for decades now. Use that on LinkedIn. It's my name, Jose Tellez, Tellez. I'm very receptive on all platforms. Goals TV has just gotten onto LinkedIn somewhat recently, and we're sharing a lot of content there. So excited to connect with anyone who sees any kind of interest in Goals TV.
Amazing. Well, Jose, thank you so much for taking the time today for being on the One Soccer Nation podcast.
Thank you, Kareem. I appreciate it.